Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm super excited to introduce you to comedian Joey ILO. From big stages to corporate events and comedy tours, Joey has brought his unique brand of comedy to audiences across North America for 18 years. Joey is convinced that comedy brings people together and laughter really heals. When he was told by doctors that he needed to find a job without any stress, he turned to what he knew best: making people laugh. It turned out what some saw as his greatest weakness is what makes him truly unique and relatable, with his onstage antics, full body comedy, and hilarious insights into family and life. Joey's comedy has a quirky honesty and quick wit to his shows, with some little old school stand up mixed with high energy and real world insight. Comedy isn't just a job for Joey. It saved his life, and he's passionate about bringing his brand of medicine to as many people as possible. Joey has performed on Last Comic Standing, Thou Shalt Laugh 5, Dry Bar Comedy, Yes TV, Comedy Channel, and is a regular on the Date Night Tour. Welcome to the show, Joey. It's great to have you on today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is so exciting. I am super thrilled to have you here today, and I can't wait to work with you on stage again here real soon as you headline for us on Saturday, February 25th for the X2 Comedy Series at Court Square Theater. I really can't wait. I'm super, super pumped. Folks around here are truly in for an amazing treat with you. Now, here's the thing, though. You are doing a bit of traveling to get here to us in the Valley because you are based out of Branson, Missouri. Now,
yeah.
were you born and raised there?
Not at all.
Where do you come from, Joey?
I'm from, I always say I'm from Chicago, but I was born in Racine, Wisconsin. We're so close to Chicago, you can smell the pollution. It's like you're right downtown. And nobody really knows where Racine is. We're right on the border between Milwaukee, Chicago. So Racine is right in the middle between those two. That's how I grew up. So I spent a lot of time. I worked in Illinois as a kid. I worked at Six Flags Great America. And was really fun. Yeah, I worked on a ride called the Cajun Cliffhanger, where it would go around real quick. And then all of a sudden we would drop the floor and you would stick to the wall.
Okay.
And we actually operated it. And so we would get really rude people. And the attendant that would load you in, he would give me what's called the wedge. It was like a W sign. And that meant not to bring the floor all the way up. And when I would not do that, they would stop the ride and it would grab your underwear and give you the biggest wedgie.
No way.
And one day we did it, and this guy had oversized boxers on, and it pulled it up over his head, and he was like, I can't see it. When it stopped, and he was like, just watching him pull it down. And it was so funny. It was awesome. And I don't work there anymore.
Imagine that.
And that was that job. No, they knocked it down. They no longer have rides that are controlled by the operators because we were giving people wedgies. So that's not good.
Was that your first job in high school?
It was one of my first jobs. Yeah, I was just like a teenager. So that was really fun.
Most people work at McDonald's.
Well, my dad wanted me to work at McDonald's. You know, he was like, you need to get a job at McDonald's. I'm like, why? He goes, we'll get free food. Because they'd throw it out at the end of the night. So he wanted us to bring it home. You know? Well, my dad was a police officer. So he used to work at McDonald's as a police officer. And so he would come home at night because that's when they used to put all the cheeseburgers and everything in the bin. They would throw those things away, but my father would ask for them. So he'd come home every night. We'd wait up till 11. Couldn't wait for him to get home because he'd have like cheeseburgers or quarter pounders or apple pies. But then sometimes he just had hamburgers. It was like the black licorice of the bag. You know, you're like, I want something more delicious.
What a clever way to save on the dinner meal budget for a family. That's great. I like that ingenuity. That's amazing. Now, why Branson, Missouri instead of LA or New York City?
So my parents used to vacation here and I had never been here until I got the call from my manager. He said, guess where you're moving? I go, LA. He goes, no. New York, no. Hawaii, no. This goes on for hours. Finally, he goes, Branson, Missouri. I go, really? He goes, are you excited? I go, why not? He goes, nobody else wants to go. And I wanted to come here because my dad had just passed away of a massive stroke. I had a stroke when I was 21 years old. And the doctors back then said I would never perform again. And I've been blessed to perform for the last 20 years. And I was missing my father. And so when he said Branson, I remember my dad saying it was a really cool place. And it was a lot of fun. And I just wanted to be where he was. And so I said, okay. And I moved my whole family. And when I got down here, it was like, whoa, it's like a whole nother culture, man. You know, you got to understand, I grew up in big cities. It was culture shock. You know, the first day I was on the radio station, the lady was like, so what do you think of Branson? And I go, oh, it's great to be here in the South. We're like 5 minutes away from Arkansas. And she goes, what makes you think we're in the South? And I was like, I don't know. The Confederate flag souvenir shop kind of gave it away because we got so many of those in Chicago. Try selling that on the South Side. You won't live long, you know. And I'm not a political person. I'm not into politics and all that. I'm just saying that it's a different culture. You know, when people come from a town and they only have one cow and one stoplight and they're proud of that, that's because that's all they got, you know. But if you're from a city and you're used to transit and getting on trains and buses, you're not used to coming to a town where it's like, I got to take an Uber to everywhere far away. It's rural. It's a different culture. So it was definitely, this was a tourist town. And so I was offered my own show. And so they wanted me to do my show in a theater at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday. And I was like, man, when are you going to get a booking on a Tuesday at 2 o'clock? So that's what piqued my interest. But also I'm a family man and I had a young family. I had a new wife. My wife is from the South. She's from the deep South. She's from Ecuador. And so we were like the first interracial couple in Branson that had a show on Billboard. So it was a little different getting used to just the area and them getting used to us. But like every job I get offered is like a country character or like a redneck character. And that's why I'm on the Redneck Comedy Bus tour during the day. That's my day job.
Yeah, let's talk about that. The Redneck Comedy Bus tour you have there. You play a character named Joey Baby.
Can you Joey Baby, come on! You're on the bus! I don't know. We just have fun. We roast people. We have, you know, we play games and, you know, we do redneck exercises and, you know, it's just crazy stuff. You know, it's just a lot of fun. And it's like we get to do our stand up on the bus. So I get to kind of approach a character that I never was really comfortable with. That was another thing when I first got to Branson. I wasn't comfortable with performing. There was a lot of old people here when I first moved here. This was like the Disney World of seniors, you know. I had never performed in front of blue hairs like that. So I kind of welcomed it because at the time I was like, man, it'd be neat to be able to tap into that market and be able to relate to people. Or even if I can't relate to them, make people laugh that I maybe can't, you know, because comedy is all about relating and connecting with people, you know.
Yes.
So sometimes I challenge myself, you know, it's kind of just being open-minded and just challenging yourself and being like, let me see if I can do it. And maybe I'm good at it. Maybe I'm not, but you walk away with like, man, it was a good experience to try, you know?
Yeah.
So it's my day job. It's what I do. And it's all comedy. It's not nothing different than what I do. You know, I do my stand up on the bus and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Do you do that often? Does it run daily, the tour?
Yes.
How does that? Okay.
Yeah. My days are usually, my days are Tuesday, Wednesday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, usually during the year. And then we do like a 10 o'clock and a 1 o'clock. So we have two shows, you know.
Okay. Is it about an hour tour?
2 hour. It's a 2 hour trip.
Okay. And it takes.
So I do about an hour of comedy. Yeah.
And it takes.
Yeah, Emily, you're like a tour guide and a comedian. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Around Branson, Missouri.
Yeah, around Branson. So yeah, we take you on a tour. We take you down to the Moonshine Place. You get 13 free shots of moonshine at 10 o'clock in the morning. Moonshine in the morning, hungover till 3 o'clock. I don't know. I don't drink.
What is happening there? Joey Baby isn't the only character in your comedy tool belt, though. You have Otis Campbell as well. Who is Otis?
Well, Otis was a character on the Andy Griffith Show, but he's so beloved in the South and in little towns that feel like they're Mayberry. He was the town drunk on the Andy Griffith Show, and I found out that I actually look like him. So when I show people that I, you know, with the hat and everything, and I started getting asked to come to Mayberry festivals and dress up at the time when the characters were still alive. A lot of them are passed on now. And I would get to perform with the actual characters from the Andy Griffith Show as kind of like a tribute.
Oh, wow. You know? Oh, wow.
Which is funny because when I first got to Branson, I was like, well, what's in Branson? And my manager was like, well, there's a lot of tribute artists there. And I'm like, well, what's that? He goes, it's the guys that dress up like Elvis, but they're not. I was like, I started making friends with these guys. I never had a friend who was Elvis, but he's not.
So then
it's Elvis. No, that's Jerry. Okay, my bad. Is that Greg? No, he's Johnny Cash on the weekends. That's why he's got the mutton chops. He's a two for one. And I was like, I am never going to become someone I'm not. But then that's when someone came up to me and said, if you're going to be successful in this town, you got to do what we are. We're Mayberry. And you just happen to look like one of the characters from the Andy Griffith Show. So I became the character and I would go around and I got in trouble one night. I almost got arrested because they didn't know who Otis Campbell was. And they thought I was impersonating a drunk or whatever. It was an accident. I was invited to be at the festival, but then I got mistaken for someone who was a real drunk and they thought I was going to drive. So that someone called the police. So a real comedy story came out of that. So I was able to take that experience and make it into a stand-up story.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I've heard that one. I really love that bit. It's hilarious.
And so everything that I do, you know, I stretch myself. I put myself sometimes in situations where I'm not crazy about doing the job, but it's like it's a job. You know, you go do your job. You might not like it, but I mean, you it's an experience that will set you up for the next job. And that's kind of what I do with my comedy. I make sure I put myself where at the end of the day, it's a comedy job, you know, it's acting, it's improv, it's stand up. It helps to strengthen things that I can put into my act.
Yeah. And you do a really good job with that. Do you have other characters that you utilize in your stand up routines that we might see?
There's a new movie that just came out. It's a faith-based movie. It's called Running the Bases. And I do my first serious role. I play a Southern pastor from Harrison, Arkansas. He said on the Paul, he said, though he slay me. I had to make sure I whisper at them because they always whisper when they come down. Though he slay me. And I'm in that movie and I'm preaching. And I marry a couple. And that's in theaters right now. So it's really cool to be a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. That was filmed last year or when did you film?
Yeah, a couple years ago, yeah.
Okay. And it's called, what's the movie called again?
Running the Bases. It's like a baseball movie. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we can see you. And it's more serious. There's no humor
at all.
That's
right.
Okay.
Well, there's humor in it. I'm not the humorous one in it. No, there's comedy in the movie.
Okay. All right.
I mean, it's not like a, you know, it's not the kind of comedy that I'm used to, but I mean, they got humorous moments,
which life is full of the comedy and the tragedy.
That's right.
Yeah, speaking of comedy, you were actually literally raised by a couple of clowns. Both your mom, for real, both your mom and dad were professional clowns. What was it like growing up with them?
It was funny. You know, my dad always told me, you know, he's like, don't box yourself in. Don't think all you can do is one thing, because in the end, that's all you have is that one thing. And he's like, don't do what everybody else does. You know, he definitely was somebody who went against the grain himself. I mean, he was a cop, a clown, and a Christian. That is just an amazing trifecta, you know,
yeah.
Especially nowadays, a lot of people like to run away from cops, clowns, and Christians, you know, so he definitely practiced what he preached. And I was inspired by my dad because he wasn't just some creepy person who put on the makeup. He actually was really funny. Like when I was a kid, I would watch him perform and he would come in the back of the room and he had like a loud kind of kiddish type voice. It was funny. And the kids just exploded in laughter and just the energy. And I watched my dad do that. And just recently I was at the Circus World Museum in Baraboo, Wisconsin, and I was walking through the clown house and I looked up and there's a picture of my mom and dad on the circus wagon in 1984. Both of my parents are enshrined in the Circus World Museum. So it's weird because people are like, oh, I hate clowns. I'm terrified of clowns. I'm like, yeah, but I mean, I'm thankful for the experiences that my father showed me, that not everything has to be dirty. Not everything has to be filthy. Not everything has to be scary. You know, cops aren't supposed to beat you. They're supposed to protect. And Christians aren't supposed to judge you. They're supposed to love. And clowns aren't supposed to scare you. They're supposed to make you laugh. So he told me, you know, there's always going to be that hacky person who puts the makeup on, spends all that time, and then walks around and uses the regular voice. You want a hug? You're scared of weirdos, okay?
Yeah.
But if the guy did it the right way and actually was really funny and used the skill sets of clowning, you know, I mean, gosh, there's so many clowns that are American treasures, like Red Skeleton was a clown and Charlie Chaplin was a clown and Carrot Top is a clown. You know, they just don't wear makeup, you know, but they do what's called clowning. So
how did you find out about the Circus World Museum? Did your parents tell you about that? And do you know?
Of course, you know, yeah. And it wasn't too far from where I grew up, you know? So, and they really struggled in the pandemic. And so the state of Wisconsin bought the Circus World. And so now they can never go out of business. And so it's just really cool to know that my parents are in that museum. So it's really, really cool.
I had never heard of this museum in all my life. What else can you find in there? Yeah.
It's where the circus started. It's where Barnum and Bailey started. So it's awesome. You know, it's a cool, even if you're not, don't have kids, it's just the history of the circus and how it started. You know,
is it a huge museum?
Oh, it's big. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty big. Yeah. Wow. And you get to enjoy the circus. They actually have circus acts and
It's
really cool. Uh-huh.
Oh, I haven't been there. That's really great. I'm going to have to look that up. How do you think your experience with growing up with clowns has influenced your style of comedy and your life philosophy?
It taught me not to take myself too serious and not to that's what the clowning thing is kind of funny. I don't view myself as a clown, but it just acting, you know, you just putting yourself out there, following your first instincts, you know, that's clowning really. But I don't think I'm a clown. I'm a stand-up comic, but just, I would watch my father. He would get up and he didn't overthink. You know, if you have to over explain a joke, it's not funny. He never over explained. He just got up there and went with his first instincts, and he knew his material and he just went up there and had a fun time. And so just watching him perform, it just inspired me at a young age. And I was young. I was like 9, 10 years old. I wouldn't get into comedy till I was like 25, 26. So
yeah. What do you think is the funniest part of your dad's act? Or what did you enjoy the most out of your dad's act?
He did this, this flea. It's kind of a, you know, it's a vaudeville bit that's been done before, but he did it, this flea. He has this trick rope and the flea is on it, and the flea would get on and he would flip him up, and he's like, he would get stuck and he'd talk to him, and you know, and then he would land back on the thing. But just the way he did it and the way he sold the bit was so funny. It wasn't the bit. And that was just it. Like, there's so many clowns that do other people's old time bits, but they're not funny. They don't have that natural ability, that talent that to sell it. And my father, just his physicality, and you know, he was really childlike in his approach. Like, he really believed that there was a flea, you know, and he was just dedicated to that. And then someone comes up and goes to give him a high five and they smash the flea and he's all sad. But he would sell it. He would sell it so much, you know, that it was believable. It was childlike. It was imagination. It was fun, you know.
Did he come next? Did that? Go ahead.
And nowadays, you know, everything's so perverted and dirty and, you know, and scary, and clowns are killing people. And, you know, it's like, I didn't grow up with that kind of clown. So I can understand when people are like, oh, I'm terrified of clowns. I'd be scared of them too. But my dad, again, he went against the grain. He didn't do what everybody else did. He always had three crosses underneath his face makeup. And that almost prevented him from being on posters because people didn't like that he had crosses under his makeup, you know, but he wasn't gonna shy away from what, you know. My dad always told me, people always ask me what my answer, what is my secret? And he goes, I go to tell them and then they don't want to hear it. It's like, well, why'd you ask me for?
Did he come up with his act naturally, or did he go to school? How did he decide he wanted to become a clown? Do you know?
Yeah, he wanted to, he didn't want to be a Shriner. He just wanted to be a clown. And there was this children's event at our church, and he and they needed a clown. And so he volunteered, and he just put a bunch of makeup on his face and came down and did it. But then he realized, man, I like this, but I want to do it for real. So he went to clown college in Indianapolis and learned how to do it professionally. And then he had contracts and everything. So at a young age, when I got into stand-up, I was just copying my dad's clown contracts because you would get money for this stuff. And he showed me how to do that. So,
yeah, I think I would actually very much be interested to meet your dad after knowing you. And it would be amazing to watch him perform. I'm wondering more specifically, how do you feel that experience impacted your stage performance for yourself as a performer?
It does, because my dad died of a massive stroke. I had a stroke when I was 21. So after he passed away, I decided to honor him and follow in his footsteps. And so, like, when my dad said, you know, you don't have to be filthy to be funny, I made sure that that was my recipe. You know, everything I thought, well, I remembered our memories and my childhood with my father, I decided to make that the recipe for my comedy. Even though I was creating my own jokes and my own things, I decided that I didn't need to be dirty. You know, when I started in the clubs, maybe I tried to be dirty, and I realized it wasn't me. It wasn't who I was. So I had to go back to my own childhood and the way I grew up and find the innocent me of, you know, my motives, why I was doing what I was doing, and translate it in the purity of the comedy, you know, that it was coming from a real place of love and passion. And that's what my dad always did. He was friends with the real Ronald McDonald. He used to go to the Ronald McDonald House. I used to watch him as a young kid make sick kids laugh and kids with cancer. And so, yeah, my father, he didn't just do comedy. He did it to give. He did it to make people smile. And so I just remembered that. And I was like, I want to do that. I want to bless people with what I do. I don't want to scare people. I mean, there's tons of people that want to do that. And I don't, you know, I don't judge anybody for doing that. I wish that they would respect why I do what I do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty much why you work clean exclusively, it sounds like, and why it's important to you, is kind of what resonates with you personally, and also to honor the legacy of your father and what he gave you.
Definitely. I mean, my dad obviously chose a different life, so I don't only do clown stuff. I mean, I used to do rap. I used to do hip hop. I went to an all black church. I have a pretty extensive background in diversity as far as my lifestyle choices myself. I mean, my wife is from South America. I got married in Ecuador. I've traveled all over. And so I love cultures. I love meeting people, and that all that stuff influences my comedy and how I can relate to people. The more that I travel, the even when we do the Redneck Comedy Bus, we get tourists that are on the bus, and I'll ask them, where are you from? And they'll be like, Oklahoma. They'll say the city. I've already performed in their city. I've already learned about their city. I already know. So when I have a joke about it, they're like, they loosen up. They're like, man, he knows where I live. He's been there. That's crazy. So traveling is I love it. It makes you understand the world a little bit better and people from different areas and cultures. And it helps me to relate in my comedy. And that's where I write out of. So it's like input, you know, I feel like that movie Short Circuit. When I'm on the road, I'm like, I need more input. And that's what the traveling does for me, you know, getting to meet different people from different areas and that. And being open to challenge myself to adapt.
To adapt, to be relatable and connect more with people, which is an amazing blessing, and also can create even more laughter when people feel understood and feel connected to the performer. So that's that's amazing. You mentioned earlier how comedy, it sounds like, saved your life. It's also in the bio that we read. I'd love for you to talk about that a little bit more. You had a stroke at 21.
Yeah, I had to go to a Mayo Clinic, and the guy who wrote the book on my disease, I have a rare disease called familial periodic paralysis, and I will become paralyzed periodically. And I know that sounds complicated. And so when I asked the doctor who wrote the book on my disease, I said, well, what is it? And he goes, you become paralyzed periodically. And I remember he was telling me, you'll never perform again. You're done. And I wanted hope. And I looked at the doctor and I said, so what you're saying is I'm a paraplegic with privileges. And all of a sudden he went, and snot came out of his nose because he started laughing. And I realized, I want to do that. I want to make snot come out of someone's nose who's telling me I ain't ever going to do something. And so that's what inspired me. That's what saved my life, because I would get on stage and people would just laugh. And I was sick. I was super sick. I was bleeding out of my mouth and collapsing after shows. And I would get up on the stage, and there was the moments that I was free. That was the moment that I was healed. That was the moment that I was, for that short time, the crowd never knew of my illness. They never knew that I was sick. I've been sick my whole career. Even my dry bar special, I fell 2 days before my dry bar, and the whole left side, I dislocated my shoulder. I had a cast under my arm. I did my whole set, and the haters on YouTube were like, man, he's in bad shape for 42. But they just couldn't see that I had a cast on. They didn't know that I fell. Of course, because my face was all swollen. And it still is, because I'm on medicines that, you know, made me gain a little bit of weight and different things like that. But I would focus on the comedy. I would focus on writing. I would focus on the stage and getting on stage. And once I got on the stage, I was free. I was healed. I wasn't sick anymore for that moment. And that's what motivated me. That's where I feel like it saved my life, because if I would have just sat home and been like, woe is me, and it's the end of the world, and I'm never going to do anything, and I'm a failure, man, nothing kills you faster than giving up, you know? Mm-hmm.
That's
and so I've just been wanting to be determined, and it's been hard during the pandemic. I got hospitalized again a couple years ago, and I started going through it again, and was attacked a lot, struggling with anxiety, depression, mental stuff, you know, that I never dealt with before, and again, I just went back to the place. It was my father, almost from the grave, in a sense, just encouraging me to go back to what has always worked, you know, keep family first, you know, keep God first in your life, get up, you know, be thankful, appreciate everything you have. And, you know, and it kind of helped me get back, you know, so.
To create.
Which is very hard in what we do, because it's so competitive, you know?
Yeah. That's true. The beauty is exactly what you're talking about. The ability to create and make people laugh And we're living in some very challenging times right now. So it is a inspiration and a blessing to be able to take a minute and take a break from life and the hardships and laugh and feel somewhat normal again.
Yeah, it was like seeing those people smile. Yeah. Even though I wasn't happy inside, I was like, that's awesome, though, that I was able to make them smile with that old material.
Good bits are good bits, Joey.
Exactly. So I know what it's like not to feel inspiration at the moment, but yeah. The fact that I kept going, and then all of a sudden I came back, and I remember one of my bosses here in town that books me at the resorts. I came and he comes up to me and he's like, he's back. Joey's back, you know, because I never told him what I was going through. He never knew that I was going through that stuff, but he knew that something had changed and there was something wrong. But then he was like, you're back, you know, and it was comedy that if I would have just stayed at home, I'm telling you, man, I wouldn't have been able to get back on the stage again, you know.
But
so just going out and fighting through those fears and fighting through those feelings and not isolating myself and putting myself around people who uplift me and encourage me. And I think I'm so thankful for my wife and my family and my mom and just the support system that I have. So.
Yeah. There's something about utilizing the gifts and talents we've been given, no matter where we are in the process, because we're all on a journey, but there's something about utilizing them that brings you alive, that brings you some hope and some healing by doing what you've been designed to do. And it won't look perfect. Some of us can get paralyzed, myself included, by wanting things to be all just so before you do them. But there's a beauty in letting go of that process, you know, or that perfectionism, and letting yourself grow and learn and being okay with it not being perfect, and using that as an opportunity to cultivate some self-compassion, because who is perfect?
You know? Right, right.
Yeah. So that's really beautiful that you did that. Quite a story to be able to have some significant health issues and step up on stage and perform with those. Did you have any fear in this, especially early on, that you might become paralyzed on stage while you were
performing? Oh, yeah. I mean, well, my disease is it's a stress-induced illness. So the more stress you have, I mean, that's why, like, man, when you read that intro and you're like, he's been doing it for 18 years or 15 years, that right there, it just encourages me. You know, it just makes me go, when I'm up against it, when I feel like they're like, you'll never do this again, I'd be like, well, you know, if I never do it again, I did it for 18 years. You know what I'm saying? every year is just a being thankful and appreciative of what I do have and how far I came, and everything comes to an end, you know? And so maybe my career will come to an end. It could come to end tomorrow, but I just want to be able to, there's still a place for me. If it's not comedy, I would like to encourage people with my story that they can go forward and they can do great things through adversity. You know, they can overcome any challenge, you know? But there was many times I was on stage where I was like, wasn't so much that I was scared. I was just like, how am I going to do this? You know, I was just sick and feeling like I was going to collapse, and, you know, I can't control what my body. And so I really had to trust in God and ask him to give me the strength to go forward and to do what I did. So, yeah, like I said, when you say 18 years, that's like biggest accomplishment, you know. I hope it's 19, 20 and 21 and see how long we can keep going. So.
Yeah, me too. I love your story. And your first year even as a stand-up, that was a whirlwind year, in my opinion. I mean,
oh, very much so.
Yeah, you appeared on NBC's Last Comic Standing in season 5. How did that happen in your first year of comedy?
I stayed outside for 2 days in the cold. And I was in the bloopers line. I wasn't in the, everybody else had a private invitation to audition. And I was one out of three people that actually made it onto the show out of the blooper line. They were using our line for the ones that sucked. And I had a friend who wasn't even bad. He was really funny. And he thought he did good in the audition. And when they went to edit it, they put crickets over the over his joke and made him look like he bombed. But he said when he recorded it, he thought they said that he killed it, but they used him as a cricket, you know. So so when I say I was on Last Comic Standing, that was a huge accomplishment because I wasn't in the blooper reel and they didn't make me look like, they made it look like I went to the semifinals. So I was standing up on that stage in the semifinals. So pretty awesome.
I know, in your first year. And then I believe it was a couple of years ago, you did your comedy special on Dry Bar, right? In April, at least. Yes. So for laughers that may be unfamiliar with Dry Bar Comedy, it's located in Provo, Utah, where they have shows Friday and Saturday night, and then they film them. They release the clips and specials online and through social media. You can Google and find them very easily. Joey, your special is called Just Work With What You Got.
And that was based on my shoulder, man. I mean, when I fell, I couldn't feel the whole left-hand side of my body. I was sitting up every night trying to get the strength to hold the microphone because I tore the ligaments in my thumb and I was so banged up, you know? And so when they sent me the rough draft and they asked me what I wanted to call it, I was like, just work with what you got. Cause I didn't have anything really, you know, I just had half of my body that worked. And it's funny because people are like, he's so physical and he moves, and they didn't realize how much pain I was in. So I don't know how many more years I can continue to do that. So that I just put it all out there because I was like, hey, this is going to go on tape. Let me record it. You know?
Wow. That's really painful. While you're no pain meds while you were up there, you just powered
through. Oh yeah, I had no pain meds. I didn't even go to the doctor, and by the time I went to the doctor, it had healed out of socket. So when I got to see the X-rays 2 years later, it totally healed. It still popped out.
Oh my gosh, is that uncomfortable? Yeah. Oh my gosh, is that uncomfortable right now?
A little bit. That's why you see me doing this. Trying to pop it back.
How? Why couldn't you get it fixed? What was happening?
I didn't have insurance at the time. Again, just work with what you got, Dawn. Just work with what you got.
Like, what is happening? Well, other than the painful shoulder, what was the general experience?
Oh, it was awesome. It was good for me because I was able to do it right before the pandemic. I kind of felt bad for some of my friends because when the pandemic hit, they couldn't have an audience. And so they said some of my friends were like, they didn't like the experience as much. But I had a full audience and they were just great. And the hospitality of the staff was amazing. And it was great. I used to work at a place called Club 3 Degrees in Minneapolis. And it was very similar to that place. So I felt at home. I really did.
Yes, because it's like a comedy club, right? Where they film it and with the audience. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So you do
it's a comedy club and a studio all in one. It's like a recording studio. They're just recording you.
I think that's great.
The room is really there for them to record your sets.
Yeah, do you have
to? And they just knock out special after special. I remember the guy, the producer comes up and he goes, we can make you look good. We can make you sound good, but we can't make you funny. Good luck.
You're like, duly noted.
Exactly.
Do you just do one filming or you do the both shows?
So you get two shows. Okay. So I knew that I had to knock out that first show because I was in so much pain. And I walked up to the mic guy. I said, put it in my hand, bro. Put it in my hand. He was like, he had no idea. I was like, could you just put your arm there? Could you just close it? Okay, got it. And went out and just, you know, I get done with the first set and they were like, man, that was great. You don't have to be as physical in the second one. Just do some material and you got yourself a special. And it came out right away. As with some friends, it took years for their specials to come out. So I was really, really happy to see I was just happy, you know. It wasn't the best set I ever did, but it was the best set in that situation.
I would imagine. That's a miracle you went out there at all. Some people would have been like, I'm out.
Well, you know what's interesting is I said to myself, if I don't go out and do this, I'll never get this opportunity again. And so, you know, I just decided, I'm like, well, I made it all the way here and I'm here. I might as well conquer my fear and do it. And that's something that I work with my kids. I always talk about to them about conquering their fear. And I got a daughter with autism and she was always scared of tunnels and stuff. And so we go on roller coasters to conquer our fear. she would be like, does it have a tunnel? I'm like, no. So she's like, okay, I'll go on it. So we go on this ride and it goes straight to the ground. Boom, it was scared me. Went in three corkscrews and she goes, let's do it again. And I'm like, but if it had a tunnel, she would have been scared.
I know some of that sounds frightening to most people, but she's doing it again. That's great. Your family, you have two children. You've been married how long now?
Oh, man, 15 years.
15 years. And you have a lovely family and a very busy comedic career, both in your in-season in Branson and your off-season when you tour. How do you balance your family life with your comedy career?
Well, we live in a tourist town, so the tourists come to us, which is cool. And so it's all seasonal, really. So this is what's called the off season. This is where the town shuts down January, February, March, doesn't reopen till March. And even when it does reopen, it's kind of slow go. So basically when my season gets going in April and May, June, July, that's why I'm just so busy at that time. I don't even need to leave the town. I could just perform at resorts all around town because the tourists come from all over. And so I perform for the tourists. And then as soon as we get done with New Year's, I go out on the road and perform January, February, March. And then I get back by April and we do it all over again. And I've been doing that for 10 plus years.
Man,
I've been here 10 years. So
yes, really working out. That is a really nice thing for a comedic performer in a stand-up to be in front of a tourist audience because it's always changing. You don't have to have a...
Yeah, you're not in a room with a bunch of comics hating on you. you get to have a room full of people who are the consumers and that are going to, they're going to be honest with you if they like it or not. So...
Really, going to be honest, no matter what. What's your most memorable experience about that, liking it or not?
Oh, I get it. I get it all the time. Like, you get it all the time. Sometimes, well, on the redneck bus, like, it was funny. I was just waiting for it to be funny or, people say mean, rude things like that all the time. But, you know, it's just like, okay, I'll stuff like that.
You just roll with it.
You know, I treat the resorts and stuff as practice anyways. It's like my open mic. It gets me ready for the road, you know. And so when you go on the road, man, you get treated so much better. It's like people are so appreciative. Like, you guys are so nice to have me. And, you know, it's just, you feel like a rock star, you know. You know, like,
that's what we're trying. That's the goal. This is to treat all the comedians that come in like rock stars and keep getting better at it.
We definitely do that.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate hearing that. What do you love about doing comedy the most, Joey ILO?
Like I said, just making people smile. I mean, putting joy in people's lives. People need it now. There's a need for it. And so I kind of feel needed. I feel needed to work on my craft and try to be as funny as I possibly can be. And, you know, there's sometimes I'm not, and I just have to keep working on it. But when you get that crowd that just laughs nonstop, and it's just a joy. It's like, wow. You know, I brought joy to those people's lives. And you know, we get people that come up to us after shows and it's like, I lost my loved one. I haven't laughed for years. Or when you hear those stories, you're just like, man, that's what I'm doing. That's why I do what I do. So that's what I love to be an encouragement to people, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm curious, before we wrap up here, you have such an amazing story, raised by clowns and you doing your work in Branson, Missouri, and you just did a serious role. You've got a lot of life experiences, and we didn't talk about this much, but you also, too, were an actor, you were a musician first, right?
Yeah, I was a rapper. Yeah, I started out rapping at a young age. My dad didn't like rap music, but I had a speech impediment. I used to stutter. And so I would use the words. And so at the age of 11, I started doing Christian rap because my dad didn't want me doing secular because of the bad language and all that. But I would have a hard time saying what I wanted to say because I would stutter all the time. But I wrote these words. I was 13 years old. And it went, I say, it's hard to be a Christian, walk it, talk it, live it, breathe it, lead it, do what you do and really mean it. Have faith in God when you can't even see him. Your friends are turning a back on you. They laugh at you, get mad at you because you ain't who you used to be. You changed and rearranged your life. And ever since today, you hooked up with the Christ and been the same, determined to stay. Ever since all of his sins and now have passed away, you made anew. Only if you can enter into the promised land where you be the man or woman of God he's called you to be. And if you are, then get on your feet and come along and take a walk with me. All my soldiers in the house. So where you at? Oh,
oh my goodness.
So I was 13 when I wrote that.
Oh, wow. And you remember it very well.
Yeah. And so I had my stroke and I couldn't even remember what my aunt's name was, but I never forgot my raps. You know, staring at my paper as it's looking blank, I start moving the hand and the pen starts dropping ink. What did you think? I lay down and die young. My mission ain't done when in the middle of the night when the battle was won. Here comes the sun now. Which one of you wants to be untrue? Out of the blue, creep this kid that you thought was innocent, started playing games with your mind and made you look like you were ignorant. Very inconsiderate he was, but I'm not the one to point the finger and judge. Just don't associate myself with shady people. I keep my eyes on the prize and we get sidetracked by the lies. It's better to be wise than be confused and get abused by those that oppose and strike blows. With these words, I close objectively and collect my thoughts collectively.
Wow, that's amazing. People that can do that amaze me. Have you heard of this comedian Chris Turner that does the freestyle rap?
No, I haven't heard of him yet.
Yeah, he goes out and he gets suggestions from the audience. He'll get five different suggestions and then he'll freestyle rap it on stage. It's quite remarkable. So
yeah, I don't rap anymore. I haven't rapped for years. I haven't done those raps for years, but I thought I would just show you that's I started writing my words down at a young age. I was 13, 14 when I wrote both of those raps. So just the understanding and there was so much in my mind I wanted to get out and I couldn't do that with my regular speech. But when I formatted it rhythmically, then that's when it came out.
Yeah, very, very impressive. And then you make the switch to comedy from singing a musician, being a musician and a rapper. How come?
Well, so I found that like joke writing was similar to rap writing because rap is very descriptive. And so I took the approach of rhythm. Everything has a rhythm. So like I would write a setup, punchline, punchline, setup, setup, punchline, punchline, setup.
And I love that.
So my set is like a rap, you know, and the beat is the laugh. So I would stop, let them laugh. That's a beat. Do the next line. Let them laugh. That's a beat. Do the next line. Let them laugh. That's a beat. Do the next line. Let them laugh.
Laugh. That's a beat. Do the next line. Laugh. That's a beat.
Right. But get more intricate with it, you know, change it up.
You know. That's great. Well, you have a lot of experiences to draw from. So what is your writing process like for your jokes?
So I'll just like take like different life experiences. I grew up in the church, you know, but I grew up in an old church. Like one of my favorite jokes that I like to do is now I go to the new churches with the laser lights.
Yes. You can't see him right now, but he's waving the laser lights.
I have the ADD. You know how hard it is to praise and worship with the laser lights? Shout to the Lord. What are all these lasers, you know? So like just in doing physicality things and, you know, yeah, I forgot that they can't see me, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
Coming out, you know, like I'll be at a church and I'll see the lasers. So that would be the first thing that I address. I'll come out. I'm like, it's great to be at this church. They got the laser lights, you know, I start to get all physical and weird and that loosens the crowd up. And then I hit them with the punchline to hit them with the jokes and make fun of that, you know, because you know, it's like people would be like, oh, you can't make fun of the church. But like a laser light, you can make fun of laser lights.
Yes, you can.
Just finding those soft targets, you know.
That's great. So you kind of, your process is you have some material you have prepped ahead of time, but you're also taking in your environment and doing some improv comedy as well.
Very much so. And then that comes from the experiences because so I'll do my material and then sometimes funny things will just happen because I'm performing so much. Then I remember how that happened, where it happened. And then I can, you know, because like that's how that one joke about coming from the small town, they're always proud of stuff you're not supposed to be that proud of, you know, like I was in Stanley, Wisconsin. And they're like, you know what we're known for? It's like, what is it? We got the biggest prison in the state. I'm like, well, I'm trying to stay out of prison. I think I'll sit this one out. And then I just go on this thing about people being proud of stuff you're not supposed to be that proud of, you know, just small towns. And, you know, and so when I'm in a small community, it's really funny because then all of a sudden someone will shout out what they're known for. And it's hilarious stuff, you know? So I don't know. It's just stuff like that.
Yeah,
I don't want to do all my jokes, but.
No, but I love the ones you are kind of giving us a peek into right now. Now, with last time you were in the Valley that we were on stage together was pre-pandemic, if I remember right. We did a few shows together with Cornbread.
But this Cornbread.
Yeah, so this will be the first show for you, I believe, in Court Square Theater coming up here in Harrisburg.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what are you looking forward to the most about coming to Harrisonburg, Virginia?
Trying to get in there. Holy mountain. My goodness. I just hope my wagon can get over your hills and I can find you in your valley. So what airports am I flying into? Well, we got Harrisonburg, Shenandoah Valley. We got the Log Cabin Airlines. I've like never heard of these places. When you look at the price, it's like $5,000 to fly in there.
He's exaggerating a little bit, people.
You guys are in witness protection out there, man. No, I'm just kidding.
So it sounds
I'm going to find you. I'm going to get there. And that's, I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to being there. Last time I was in that area, they were really nice to me and I had a great time. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So finding us will be a big joy for you today. I trust you will. You have found us before. you can bring that on stage at Court Square Theater. They will love it and they will love you. Well, let's tell the laughers, how best can they follow you, Joey, on social media or otherwise to connect with you and see where you're performing next?
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. Just look up Joey ILO. You can check out my dry bar special on YouTube. Just put Joey ILO and it will pop up. And then you can see kind of my style and how I perform. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Joey is amazing, laughers. And thank you so much, Joey. This has been such a tremendous joy hanging out with you today, chatting it up about life and comedy, your story. This has been super, super fun. Thanks again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. And laughers, you can see Joey perform live on Saturday, February the 25th, as he helps us kick off the second season of the X2 comedy series at Court Square Theater in Harrisonburg, Virginia, as your headliner. Plus, you'll see three other comedians on this show, including yours truly, that's me, Chris Womack, and Noah Miller. We can't wait. So buy your tickets today at www.x2comedy.com. We'll be sure to put that link in the show notes for you as well. Know that season tickets this year are also available for this 6-show series throughout the year featuring 6 different hilarious lineups. It's a great deal where you get 6 shows for the price of 4, available for purchase also at x2comedy.com. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.